You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you have the last word. From far away, they came to us with knowledge. Our gaze is shifted upwards through the sky.
I'm a raider. Oakland Raider, from the Bay to LA to Las Vegas, cause I'm a player, a Wolves player, and if you with me, pop your collar, shake them haters. I'm a Raider, Oakland Raider, from the Bay to LA to Las Vegas, cause I'm a player, Wolves player, and if you with me, pop your collar, shake them haters. I'm a Raider.
Welcome to another episode of Any Given Monday, and what an episode it's going to be. I'm Hayden Adolny, and joining me on this fine morning, Duncan Song. Welcome, Dunk.
Thanks, Nads. Look, you've nailed it there. It's going to be a huge episode, guys. We've been talking about this for a while now, but today we've got our Raiders Relocation Roundtable podcast special, and it is going to be fantastic. So joining us on the show today to discuss the issues that have arisen from the owners' meetings and the vote of the Raiders' relocation, we've got Scott Winter back on the show. Obviously, you heard him when we talked about this last on episode 3. So Scott is a contributor for Last Word on Pro Sports, Cover 32, and silverandblackpride.com. And we're also lucky enough to be joined today by Joe Arrigo. So Joe is a former radio host in the Los Angeles area, and he's the current host of the Inside the Rebels podcast. And he's the source of all of the knowledge relating to football in Las Vegas. So two very special guests. We're lucky to have them on the show today. Guys, welcome to the show.
No problem. Thanks for having us.
Yes, appreciate it.
All right, so let's dive straight into this, guys. Obviously, we're here today to talk about the Raiders relocation. So before we get into what happened in the last week or so, let's just have a really, really brief recap for our listeners as to what's happened since the vote in January 2016.
Well, in terms of what? In terms of what happened in terms of how they why they weren't allowed into Los Angeles, or, you know, going on since then, to make a very long, tedious story short that most Raider fans know, the NFL decided that they would much rather have the Chargers and the Rams in Los Angeles, just based off of the Raiders' popularity in LA. Is it would already supersede what the Rams and Chargers have probably collectively. So Mark Davis got to work on a plan that would give his team the best financial viable future off the field as well as on the field. During that time, he had a good idea that the Raiders would not be allowed into Los Angeles. So he started making inroads to have him come to Las Vegas. And those inroads came to a head this past Monday when the NFL approved the Raiders' relocation to Las Vegas, in part because of $750 million the state of Nevada told the Raiders they can have for a new stadium.
Yeah, look, you've summed it up really well there. And I mean, at the end of the day, the vote was 31-1. So it was more or less an unanimous decision, or more or less all owners were on board.
Yeah, it was pretty mind-blowing. And it was definitely a show of solidarity between the NFL owners. I mean, we were hearing going into this, you know, 27, 28 votes for a long time. But that letter, from what I heard from NFL execs talking about this and reporters talking about it the day of the vote, it just kept clicking up. And it, you know, as they went into the meeting, we heard it was Chicago and Miami was going to vote no. And at the end of the day, even Chicago just said, you know what, we're just going to support Mark. And Ross was a lone vote.
Let me interject right there. How these votes go take place, because I think this gives it – you can kind of see how the NFL does business. Is once they get in the room and they ask who's in favor of this, they'll count the 24 votes. And what they'll do then is say, is anybody adamantly against this? Like, to the point to where, to their core, they do not want this to happen, because we would like to have a 32-0 vote. At that time, Mrs. McClaskey, the owner of the Bears, was not adamantly against it. She could not find a fault other than, you know, she really would, her preference would be for them to stay in Oakland. And at that point, she's like, you know what? I'm okay. This the financials make more sense for them in Las Vegas regardless. But Stephen Ross, based off of him owning just recently buying land across from where the Coliseum in Oakland currently sits, regardless of what he said publicly, he was disappointed that the Raiders would not be staying because he had plans to develop around a stadium with the Raiders there. So he was the only one adamantly against it, and that's how the vote became 31-1.
With Miami, do you reckon that Ross was a little bit salty that he had to put no public money to get his Miami stadium developed in the last few years?
I would imagine so. I mean, when somebody that most, you know, fans look at as a joke of an owner up until this point, Mark Davis, when he sees that and a guy that comes to meetings with jeans and a hat and kind of is the anti-owner, and he gets $750 million, you know, plus a very good deal from Bank of America to move to Las Vegas, and yet, you know, he's a very powerful and very good businessman, and he has to put up his own money for a new stadium, not to mention deal with the politicians in Miami, which aren't the easiest people to deal with. You can imagine that he did have some type of sensitive feelings. He may be salty, but, you know, like I was telling, I think Scott and some other people, he could be salty, but Mark Davis was the pepper, and he was a seasoning salt, and that always tastes better than regular salt.
Absolutely.
Now, that's for sure. Now, with Miami's no vote, given that Ross had the land around the Coliseum site in Oakland, realistically, like, how much of a windfall could have he made had there been a stadium developed in that area?
That's a really good question. You just never know. Depending on what kind of project he's going to do, but he's going to make money either way. You have to understand, now that this vote has happened, Fortress SoftBank enters into a 30-day exclusive negotiating agreement with Oakland and Alameda to develop that property sans the Raiders, which means that they can develop a property and build anything if they want there, technology-wise. And they're under part of that ENA is a what you call a they have to negotiate in good faith. So this could have been the plan the whole time. Where they just basically wanted to push the Raiders out, which is something that I'm really, really starting to believe. And Ross is going to make money off that. They build a Sprint World headquarters there, or build a Sprint Labs, or build a Sprint and Convention Center and all of that. Ross is going to definitely be able to capitalize on that, especially with the location of his property. So
and let me interject.
Keep an eye on that. Go ahead.
Let me interject right there, because something that doesn't get talked about is, you know, when Donald Trump was elected president, the owner of SoftBank, the president of SoftBank, who is a Stanford grad, born and raised in the Bay Area, pledged $50 billion to develop into the United States. And if you look at what the NFL made last year versus what SoftBank is pledged, the NFL on a grander scale is not the big giant moneymaker in the room. That would be SoftBank. So in the grand scheme of things, I tend to think, and I've stuck with this for a while, that this has been the plan all along by Libby and Fortress, Libby Schaaf, the mayor of Oakland, and the Fortress group, is to, quote unquote, put their best foot forward to keep the Raiders there. But in the reality, take that money, use SoftBank to develop that land, and then revitalize the Oakland economy, which from a political standpoint would not be a bad thing for her. In fact, it's the right thing to do.
Look, it would fit from a political standpoint, especially given California politics, and they certainly don't like giving out public money for stadiums.
She's got a built-in political platform now that she's been really milking. She's now got to say no public money to the NFL, which Mark wasn't really asking for it, but this is her political agenda. No public money to the NFL. She stood tall when Las Vegas caved. Now she's not only pushed the NFL out and denied them, she's brought in a bigger Fortune 500 company and a lot more money and technical money as part of her gentrification of Oakland and increasing the economic vitality. Her goal is not Oakland. Her goal is to be governor of California or senator for California in the U.S. Congress, that kind of thing. So she's really built that up. Go ahead, Joe.
And I was going to say, but conversely, and to play a devil's advocate, when the Raiders leave and when the NBA team, the Golden State Warriors, leave, you have to understand now that they're in a position where she loses two teams. And if the Raiders win a Super Bowl in the next 3 years, and let's just say the Raiders move to Vegas or somewhere else in 2018 versus, going into the 2019 season, the season of the 2018 season. And let's just say they win a Super Bowl. How would she be looked upon? She would be vilified by the city of Oakland by not allowing the Raiders and that city of Oakland to celebrate a Super Bowl title, which, is something that very well could happen. So this is also a gamble for her from a popularity standpoint. If SoftBank decides not to develop on that land, if they can't get a deal done with Fortress, and if the Raiders win a Super Bowl not in the city of Oakland during any time of her term being mayor.
It would look horrible politically, especially given that the Raiders are so successful now. And I mean, like, if she loses the Warriors, they're gone. The Raiders are gone. And we'll see what happens with the A's. I mean, they're sort of stuck in Oakland because they can't get out. It's certainly just not going to look good, especially if Fortress don't end up developing that site.
Absolutely. I agree. And the Warriors are gone. They broke ground on a billion-dollar basketball arena in San Francisco. They're going to where they originated from. So the Warriors are gone, and they did it on her term. The A's are an interesting subject just based off of they were trying to leave Oakland. The A's kind of got stuck in Oakland, and now they're making the best of it. But if you recall, the A's were trying to move to San Jose, and Major League Baseball wouldn't allow them to due to television territory rules that Major League Baseball has. So it's not like the A's are like, we're staying in Oakland because we love Oakland. No, they're staying in Oakland because they're stuck in Oakland based off Major League Baseball rules.
Yep, and here's an interesting thing. Right now, because Mayor Libby Schaap made promises to Manfred, the Major League Baseball Commissioner, about the Oakland A's and getting them and keeping them in Oakland, should she default on that? Should she not live up to those terms, Manfred could easily say, you know what, why don't you, we're going to look at Fremont, or we're going to look at San Jose again. We're going to go ahead and give them our blessing. You just never know what's going to happen. I mean, Uber packed up, was going to put 2,000 plus jobs in Oakland, and now they're only going to put 100 or 200. They're building now with Chase, the Chase Stadium, and the office buildings that are around that with the Warriors, because they're going to get exposure. When that building goes up, right behind it, you're going to see a big Uber sign, and they're putting their 2,000 people there and leaving a skeleton crew in what they were going to do in Oakland. It would not surprise me if Mayor Libby Schaap continues to stand on this high ground of not promoting business and not helping business to succeed. She might end up holding an empty hat when all of this is said and done.
Yeah, for sure. It certainly looks like that could be the case. I just want to change tack a little bit. We've kind of skirted around the finances of the deal a little bit in that discussion. So why don't we dive into a little bit more detail into exactly what the finance agreement is. Obviously not to the minute level, but on broad strokes, can we just run through for the listeners what we think or what the finance situation actually is?
I defer to Scott in terms of the deal with Bank of America or the $750 million.
Well, both. I mean, they're both parts of it. So my understanding is we've obviously got Mark Davis. He's got $500 million. Then there's the $750 million as well from Las Vegas. And then we've got Sheldon Adelson's obviously out now, and the Bank of America's come in. So, Scott, you're probably the expert here, so...
Well, it's still a fluid situation, because while Mark Davis has lined up a line of credit, and we heard at the NFL owners meeting from Eric Gerben through Vinny Bunn Sr. that they had 10 banks lined up, and it wasn't just three, four. They were lining up and deep because of how lucrative the deal was. Now, the reason I say it's still fluid, because we probably won't see $650 million borrowed from Bank of America. It could be quite a significant amount less. Not that they're going to come in, not spending the money that they're supposed to spend on the stadium, but because they are signing naming rights and sponsorship rights and getting ad commitments that will the Raiders can absolutely apply to the equity of that loan. And instead of using the loan money, they can put forward their money with no interest. And they could end up only, you know, borrowing $200 million or $300 million. The dust hasn't settled on that yet, so it is definitely fluid. But they've inked over $70 million annually in naming rights, sponsorship deals, and advertising already. And their goal is over $100 million annually. And from the people I talked to, they were pretty excited that that was a definite realistic possibility with the way that they're advertising the sections of the stadium and whatnot, and the exposure. If you look at where it's located on the strip, if you're coming in from California, flying in, or coming in from just about any location from the south, that's all you're going to see. You're going to see the stadium first, and then the backdrop behind it, you're going to see the strip. And that kind of exposure, they were talking about, it could be worth $800-900 million annually to the city of Las Vegas, just having that extra advertising and exposure to the city. People will think about Las Vegas a whole lot more when you're looking at that Raider stadium.
And I'll say this, the price tag of the stadium, this says $1.9 billion. What people need to remember and really take into consideration before they say it's going to be a $1.9 billion stadium when there's going to be this and that overages, that's not necessarily true. I was told by senior NFL officials that when the Raiders presented the stadium proposal at the meetings and prior to it, it came in significantly less than $1.9 billion. Even it was reported below $1.6 billion. So when you look at what they're doing, Mark Davis essentially has a credit card, and the credit card says this is your limit. Whatever you go to on, you know, whatever you use on the limit, you pay back X amount of money. That's something that nobody is privy to, but I'm pretty sure it'll be a very, very fair interest rate to Mark Davis and the Raiders. And there really isn't any long-term jeopardy when it comes to the bill, the SB1 bill, which the state of Nevada passed to give the Raiders that $750 million, because occupancy at hotels, that means how many people are staying on the strip have to fall below 60%. That has never happened. The lowest it has ever been was 1988, when it was 83% occupancy, still well above the 60% threshold. It would take a severe event like a 9/11 here, where a terror attack or something would happen in London or would happen in New York in 2001. It would take something like that for these bonds to go into default. It is a really, really win-win situation for the state of Nevada, Las Vegas, and the Oakland Raiders, as well as the NFL.
That occupancy would have to be below 60% for a long time. The occupancy rate, the 60%, is basically a break even, but they're setting up a 2-year waterfall fund so that they could pay those bonds back 2 years if they had 0% occupancy. Not only that, the revenue, the state tax revenue off of the stadium itself, that's also new taxes. So it would take a long term devastating event like what Joe was talking about to over years to do that. I mean, we're talking the stadium has a potential to bring in over $60-70 million annually for state institutions and the taxpayers there. So you've got the $35 million that they're estimating for state tax generation revenue, and then, and this is Joe can even touch on this better once I say it, is that right now the UNLV makes about $2.5 to $3 million in NCAA money from their revenue with their conference. If they move to a Power Five conference, that goes tenfold. They get $30 to $35 million from the NCAA for their school. And this is with the new stadium, that is a legitimate possibility. I'll defer to Joe on the rest of that.
Yeah, and just sort of for those that don't know, a Power Five conference in American football is, in college football, you have the big schools like a University of Southern California, USC, or a a school like that, and it's where they play in terms of the it's like a division. So, and those are the guys that they get really the first opportunity to play for a national title. They also have huge TV deals with ESPN. They are making $30 million per school every single year. So UNLV is and has had conversations with the Pacific 12, the Pac-12 conference that hosts USC, UCLA, Stanford, Cal, Washington, Washington State, Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, Utah, and I believe I named them all, Oregon and Oregon State. So they have those schools that are in there. They would like to expand to 16 teams in the near future once their TV deal is up. And that's something that UNLV is being considered for, based off not just the stadium, but because they are building a medical center, and they have one of the higher law schools graduation rates in the country, as well as their business school is very good, and their athletic programs. Football and basketball aside, this year basketball in particular was down. Football, they won one more game than they did the year before, but with their other programs, athletic programs, they are all actually at or near the top of the NCAA.
Wow, so it's really going to revitalize like that whole university and make them into one of the upper echelon teams, potentially, if everything goes down as expected.
Absolutely. And, I actually yesterday was having lunch with a couple important people regarding the stadium that are very, they're very well known. And while we're having lunch at was a place not too far from UNLV. And who walks in the restaurant but UNLV's head football coach, Tony Sanchez. And he sees me, and we share a hug, and we embrace, and he's beyond excited about the stadium and what this could mean for UNLV's future going forward. And he knows now it is up to him and his staff to put together a winning program, because, quite frankly, in college athletics in America, if your football program is not winning, you are not making money no matter the sport. You could be a strong basketball school. You could be a strong women's basketball school, baseball. But if your football program is not up to par in winning, your school is not making a ton of money.
Well, that stadium's going to be a hell of a recruiting tool.
Absolutely. That, along with they're also building a new football training facility and complex to house the players 365 days a year. And that's just as big as the stadium. But the stadium is really going to help in terms of them playing in a first-class facility, having some amenities that no other colleges have, no other colleges in particular in the Mountain West where they play currently. So this puts UNLV on the map in an area they have never been before and never seen before.
Wow, that's really exciting. And I mean, at the end of the day, when you look at these financing, the agreement, it certainly doesn't appear as though that there's going to be any $1 billion debt from Mark Davis, as alleged by, your Captain Tinfoils and your super fans.
Oh, boy. No, I don't know where they get these wild ideas. You want to have a conversation with somebody. You want to have a financial, economic conversation with somebody. And then all of a sudden, they just start piling on these things that have been refuted. It gets to a point where you're swatting gnats. It's a waste of your time. Look, it's $650 million potentially from Bank of America, a $200 million G4 loan, which I'll tell you what, I would just sign me up for a G4 loan anytime, because basically a G4 loan is I'm going to take a loan from the NFL and the other 31 owners are going to pay it back for me. I'm not kidding. It is like the sweetest loan. And if I have to pay it and get back, then it's only interest rate is at 2%. It's a 15-year loan, and it's amazing. Now, then you have the reported $325 million relocation fee, which will be paid back through the revenue share more than likely on that. I haven't seen the specifics yet on that, but those will come out. And once again, Mark Davis isn't out of pocket on any of that. So then there'll be the PSL sales. Those will be done by the Stadium Authority Board so that they're tax-free and they can't be taxed by the rest of the NFL owners. That's per the G4 rules if you go into the relocation process in G4. And then Mark Davis is going to come up with the remaining balance of all of that, the $100 million and whatever's left of the PSLs and whatnot. So you're going to get all of the financials are just locked and loaded. And the way it's divided with between the team and the stadium events company is just classic. It's good business. Everybody's covered. Everybody's protected. It's going to be a win for UNLV. It's going to be a win for the Raiders. It's going to be a win for Las Vegas, a win for the NFL, a win for Nevada, a win for the governor. I mean, a win for the fans. It is to be off the chain. Go ahead, Joe.
And I was going to say that let's talk about the relocation fee. Let me point something out. The Raiders have to pay a relocation fee, as do the Chargers and the Rams. The Chargers and the Rams, beyond what somebody had said that the Rams cut a check right then and there, which is a flat-out lie, and they didn't know what the hell they're talking about, okay? They stretch them out over 10 to 20 years, and they pay an annual fee, as will the Raiders. But the Raiders still get paid off both of the Chargers and the Raiders relocation fee. So conceivably, they can use that money to pay their own relocation fee. So the Raiders relocation fee is almost zero based off what they're going to be receiving from the relocation fees of the Chargers and the Rams.
It's certainly a lot less. Certainly.
No, okay, yeah. When you take the every team roughly, if it's $650 million per team, that's $1.3 billion. You divide that by 32. So what do you got? You got about $40 million each. So the relocation fee is down to about $280 million there. So it's certainly over 10 years, $28 million. It's really peanuts in the grand scheme of things.
Exactly. Correct. And you figure that the Raiders are going to be almost half of that at $325 million. So let's say that's what you said was $40 million. So that's $20 million. So they are basically taking the money that they're getting given from the other relocation fees and giving that money back to the NFL for their relocation fee. So they're not really paying a relocation fee if you really, really drill down and look at it. And it's brilliant by the NFL and it's brilliant by the Raiders.
There were some NFL owners and executives, as I spent the time there talking to people and hearing them, there were people in that room that actually felt like that Mark Davis and the Raiders might end up being of the three teams that relocated have the best financials and make the most money out of the relocation deal to begin with. And we're talking Stan Kroenke's got NFL Disneyland. I don't necessarily if that works out the way Stan Kroenke wants to work out, he's definitely going to have more money. But you know, when you have NFL owners and executives, you know, suggesting that they've looked at numbers that I haven't looked at. You know, I've put together things through, you know, forensic accounting, but that's significant that there are people that believe that Mark Davis and the ones who voted, Mark Davis could come out of this the biggest winner out of all three.
Hit me. It's certainly a possibility, and probably a very likely possibility. I just want to shift things on a little bit. So if we're talking about building a huge new stadium, obviously you've got to consider things like infrastructure. So what can you tell us a little bit about that and the infrastructure arrangements that are in place and that have been spoken about?
Well, I can tell you that right now, and it has been for all week, the Raiders are taking soil samples and drilling down and checking out the land. Now, I can also tell you that soil samples were already done previously, not by the Raiders, and they have access to those, but they want to do their own just to be safe. And that's something that has not been out. I just found that out yesterday from somebody that's involved in the process. So at this point, they're doing soil samples. They're getting all of that stuff ready, as well as finishing up the lease and putting together what the FAA is looking to have on their end to just kind of make sure everything is hunky-dory, so to speak. So they're getting that stuff done. And with infrastructure, I was told they're looking to take the Bally High Golf Course, which was a potential site, and turn that into a parking lot for the stadium, as well as having a parking lot at the stadium, and along with a parking structure, and then have some type of monorail or tram or walkway going across from that golf course over to the stadium for the fans.
Yeah, I was out there yesterday at the site, and the day before at the site. And you could see the soil sample guys. I saw it firsthand. Spoke to some residents who, you know, commented on my picture saying, oh, yeah, they've been out there all week. And they would know. They drive by that location every day. And they could see the guy, you know, it's very easy to see. It looks like a, you know, big, giant crane, and they're pounding into the ground. It's the amount of money that they have set aside for infrastructure and infrastructure tie-in from site to off-site is quite significant from the Raiders side of things. You talk about the off-site infrastructure plan, it's up to $900 million, which is not going to be $900 million specific to tying into the Raiders or whatever. They're going to extend the monorail out. That was going to be done before the Raiders deal. They're going to widen freeways and whatnot there in Las Vegas. And if you're a resident there, it's definitely needed. I drove it for a couple of days, and it definitely needs a lot of infrastructure work. They're just prioritizing areas around where the stadium is, because that is going to be considered a high priority congestion area, because that stadium is going to be used 365 days a year. It's going to be not just for football, not just for UNLV. It's going to cover events. They're going to do conventions there, you know, a lot of different things. And what Joe was talking about as far as Valley High site, they've had a bad deal with the owner there. The county doesn't like the deal. The owner's in trouble and needs some financial money. They're going to buy him out if they actually decide to go ahead and follow through on that parking plan. They're going to buy him out of that deal, and
they may not have to buy him out, because going through a legal process. He's been charged with embezzlement, federal embezzlement. So he's going through a legal process right now that land may be, and he doesn't even own the land. He is leasing the land through, I believe, the FAA or somebody else. So he basically swindled his way into the land. He's like Han Solo. He swindled his way into the land, and now he's making money from it. And they got to go through him in order to use the land. It's a very complex situation, but this is what this guy's done for a living in Las Vegas for quite some time.
Yep. So once we get all that taken care of, you get in that footbridge, and if it comes across a 15 caddy corner, the whole area, I'm just telling you this right now, that whole area is going to look absolutely fantastic. I mean, and you're going to see surrounding businesses feed off of that, because that's what Las Vegas does. They complement each other with proper businesses around what's making money so that they can make money. And it is going to be another building boom, I believe, for Las Vegas. Just my opinion.
Exciting times. Now, let's just move it on just a tad. So let's bring up Legends Hospitality. So it's part owned by Jerry Jones, and they run numerous aspects of stadiums. So they run parts of Jerry's World in Arlington, Levi's Stadium, Yankee Stadium, even Old Trafford in Manchester. So let's talk a bit about the Raiders, the personal seat license, $100 deposits, because the receipt wasn't necessarily coming from the Raiders.
No, they're coming from Legends.
Yeah, Legends Hospitality. I spoke to Stephen Jones about this. And the first thing I want to put out a disclaimer for Stephen Jones is the Joneses do not handle the day-to-day operation of the company. They are they do have a lot of stock in that company, and so he was very proud and very excited to speak to it. He said they have what they call a 360 plan. You can get hospitality. You can get concessions. You can get project development services. You can get ticket management. And then you can also get non-football event stadium management. All things that the Raiders need. However, at the time that I spoke to them, they hadn't come to an agreement on everything. They're still in negotiations. But obviously, they've negotiated out that Legends will have the ticketing deal and their hospitality, overall hospitality. So he wanted to make sure you knew that the Raiders could get the whole 360 plan, or they could pick each one that they wanted a la carte, and they'll build a special plan just for them should they get that opportunity. Joe?
Oh, that you handled it just fine. I've
okay.
Nothing to add.
I just want to add, you know, like you've got the stadium events company, which will be the Raiders. Now, if they subcontract those non-game day events to Legends, What, in terms of an expected revenue split on those days between Legends and the Stadium Events Company, what's the, like, given like the contractual agreement? I know like you don't know the specifics, but what can we sort of expect from a revenue split on those non-game day events? Because that's really going to impact Mark Davis and how much money he's going to be pocketing on the non-event days, because those, he needs a lot more than just the game days to make it worthwhile.
Let me speak to that too here. A consulting company, which is what I do, one of my businesses, my job is to generate money that you don't have and you can't ever get. So I'm going to be paid in the money that I make for you as the owner. That's exactly what Legends is going to do. By them coming in and running the non-football events, they're going to generate revenue that a lesser experienced company would do. Or Mark Davis by himself. I'm not putting Mark Davis down, because Legends does this specifically and exclusively. This is their business. So whatever Mark thought he could make on it, let's say he was going to make $125 million a year from the Stadium Events Company. Legends comes in and says they build it up, and these are, you know, guesstimations and just for examples. They say, we're going to charge you $20 million to do our job here. It's not a revenue split. It's a direct fee. But we're going to bring in $175 million. So Mark starts off with $125 million if he does it by himself. Now, you know, if he does it with Legends, they're going to make $175 million. And he pays them $20 million for that. And so he gets to keep $145. He's made, you know, Legends has now made Mark $20 million. And they keep $20 million of money that didn't exist before. That's what Legends do. The Legends does. They generate income that you are never going to get in the first place, and that's what they're paid from. And it's, they've done it, as you can see. You said Manchester, New York Yankees, AT&T Stadium, Levi, etc. So there you go.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, given that Sheldon Adelson was going to be running the non-game day events, and he was essentially charging $650 million for that. So the reality of the situation is, now that Adelson's out, they're bringing in Legends as a consultant, and Mark's going to make an absolute windfall as a result of it. For all this talk about Mark having limited business acumen, I certainly think it's a good business standpoint for him, that's for sure.
Yeah, and Sheldon Adelson, you know, he wanted more than just, you know, non-game day revenue and whatnot. He wanted game day revenue, which he was never going to get. And I was told, finally, yesterday, he wanted 100% of the concessions, which was something that he was never going to get. So he was kind of, you know, he kind of played himself, so to speak. You know, he tried to play high-end poker with certain guys in the NFL, and Sheldon Adelson lost. And I'll say this, you know, Vegas does a very good job of, they can sell itself. I mean, the reason why certain, like, okay, let's use Beyonce for an example. Beyonce wasn't coming to Vegas anytime soon, along with Jay-Z, because she wanted to do a stadium tour. Well, there's no stadium in Las Vegas. Sam Boyd seats 35,000 people. That's where UNLV currently plays. That is not nearly big enough to where she could put on a show where she can make a ton of money, where conversely, she can go to the L.A. Coliseum where USC plays and the Rams currently play, and she could put in 140,000, 150,000 people and make damn near $1 million or $2 million just for that one show. So that's another reason why, you know, it's Vegas. It's the entertainment capital of the world. There's nobody, no matter what part of the world you live in, not New York, not L.A., Miami, New Orleans, London, Rio – they do not put on a show better than Las Vegas. And that's something that the Raiders are banking on for their long-term financial future.
Just on that point, we sort of talking a little bit about revenue streams and things like what the Raiders are going to get out of Legends and that sort of thing. So given that the NFL obviously has a salary cap and a floor that the teams have to stick to, what benefits do we see that all this financial revenue from the new stadium is going to give the Raiders going forward?
Well, Mark Davis will be one of the billionaires now. Finally, they'll have some money to go make sure their facilities are top notch facilities. They are some of the best facilities. They'll be able to, you know, have one of the nicer stadiums. These are things that players look at. Players spend 300 plus days a year at the team facility. They're at the stadium 10 games a year, but they're at the team facility a hell of a lot more than they are anywhere else. And that's a big deal to them. Because of the salary cap, it doesn't matter how much he makes outside revenue, because that doesn't affect the team, so to speak. That affects Mark Davis's bottom line, and it affects his team's net worth, which if the Raiders' net worth goes up, every other team in the NFL's net worth goes up. That's just how the NFL works. If one goes up, they all go up. And that's the reason why having them as a team that's finally going to be in a nice stadium, finally going to have the type of money and the type of facility and whatnot that is needed for them to be known as a great team in the NFL. And that's going to increase that team's value, which is going to make Jerry Jones a hell of a lot of money, and Robert Kraft, and these guys that have been putting in so much money, so much of their own money, to keep guys like Mark Davis, you know, previously in Oakland, and guys like, you know, Shad Khan in Jacksonville, and these other owners who are lower level market teams that their teams just aren't good. It's finally, they're paying equal amount of money. Now Mark Davis is going to be in that Jerry Jones, that Robert Kraft, that Stephen Ross, Stan Kroenke group of people, based off of, he's going to be a big boy at the table now. He's not going to have his hand out saying, I need some more money. He's the guy saying, how much do you need? And that's going to be happening in the near future.
And to add to that, guaranteed money for contracts has to be paid up front, and it has to be put into an escrow account. So we've got Derek Carr coming up. Let's say we have to put $70 million up in guaranteed money. That money has to be put into an escrow account right then. The minute that's signed, all guaranteed money goes into that account, which means you have to have that money on hand. And if you understand the inflation value of the NFL cap, it has gone up in the last 5 years. I mean, it's went from $120 to almost $170 million. I mean, and the amount of guaranteed money keeps going up. So having liquidity is important. Plus, what people don't realize is just because there's a salary cap, doesn't mean that covers the rest of your payroll. An NFL team has anywhere from $250 to $350 million in NFL payroll, which is not covered by the revenue share. So if you want to do extra amenities for the fans, you want to increase your fan experience, you want to be that destination, you want to market your team, you want to do a lot of things that they have been they've had to be very lean on in the past, that's not an issue anymore. Now you're getting world-class customer service. Now you're getting world-class fan experience. Now you're getting to be able to not have any worries whatsoever about building state-of-the-art facilities. And Joe has touched on this before. He even had an interview with a guy on his show about how important it is to have world-class training facilities. I'll leave it back to Joe on that, because he was an actual player in Major League Baseball. He can tell you how important that is. Go ahead, Joe.
Well, you spend so much time, you know, not just on the road, but you spend so much time with your teammates. You spend almost every waking hour of your day, from the time you get up, you go to your facility. You know, you practice at your facility. You get your treatment at facility. You watch film at your facility. You meet at your facility. You do your media obligations at your facility. You're there from 8 in the morning till 5, 6, 7 o'clock at night for the most part. You eat at the facility as well. I mean, that's all part of it. And if you don't have a good facility, it makes it very easy for guys to leave. Make guys say, okay, you know what, I'm going to go get something to eat, which could lead to some type of trouble. So you always want to have a good facility. And that's something that, you know, the Raiders finally have. I mean, Jack Del Rio came in and was like, we need a new weight room. These are the same weights that were here 40 years ago. And now they get a new weight room, and now you see new types of muscles being built versus the old muscles. Like, you see, you can train differently. So having a new facility as a player is very big, and it's very important for your long-term health and for the health of everybody on the team.
I think that's exactly right. I think you've hit the nail on the head there, Joe. So we're seeing all these benefits. You know, you talk about the benefits of having the improved facility and the money in general. And the fact that the deal was a win-win for the Raiders, for Las Vegas, for Nevada, for the NFL. So when do we think the team is actually going to move? If all the signs are pointing to that this is a win-win, when do we think it's going to happen?
If I had to go with my gut feeling, I'll say 2018. I think they're gonna be here. There's a report that came out today that the Oakland Council, City Council, or whomever it was, already informed the Raiders they found a loophole in the lease and they're gonna quote unquote evict them for this upcoming season. I can tell you right now that's an erroneous report and a flat out lie. I spoke to the Raiders earlier today. On Friday, and they said they have not heard from anybody, and they do not. That report is the furthest thing from the truth. And until they hear from somebody, they plan on playing in 2017 in Oakland. But Sam, the stuff at Sam Boyd, there's things that need to be done. They need to widen Sam Boyd. They need to increase security. They need to make the locker rooms bigger. They need to put some temporary luxury boxes, you know, up there. That's all kinds of stuff that can happen. And it could be happened by 2018. So I think that's when you'll see them moving. If they don't stay in Oakland this year, I tend to think Cal Berkeley is where they'll end up playing for the next couple of years until they move.
Now, we've also talked about Ribby Sheff and how she's certainly politically positioned herself as that, in that she hasn't really taken much interest in the Raiders the last few years. And I remember, Joe, you reported back, I think it might have been as back around September when they got the $750 million in finance from Nevada, that she more or less was wanting to kick them out ASAP. So has her position changed since the vote has happened, or is she still hell-bent on getting them out as soon as she can?
The report, I remember the date of the report because it was my daughter's birthday, so it was the 21st of October. But you're pretty close, buddy. You're pretty close. No, her position hasn't changed. You know, she is what she is. She's not a fan of Mark Davis. She's not a fan of the Raiders, and I think it's evident with, you know, the way she's treated them during this whole process, and the way she's been caught in lies and manipulated the Raiders fans into believing that she actually was trying to put something together viable for him. You know, her office has gone pretty dark, but the couple people I did speak to in Oakland, they tend to think that she is, you know, she's trying to find a way to get him out. She's talked, you know, her city councilmen have talked about openly about trying to find a way to get him out. And we'll see if that happens. But again, as soon as she can get that Coliseum or get them out of there, and the A's can, you know, in the next couple months, they're going to announce their stadium plans. As soon as they start breaking ground, and the sooner she can get them both out and they're doing their own thing and developing that land, in her mind, the better.
I want to speak to that a little bit more, because I've been really working this from that angle and how she would be able to do this. Now, Oakland and Alameda would take it on the chin legally if they tried to force Mark out. I mean, we're talking over $200 million lawsuit. It's huge. The price to move an NFL team would then be the would be won in damages against Oakland and Alameda. Now, however, remember I talked about that 30-day exclusive negotiating agreement with Fortress SoftBank. There's a way that if they sell the land to Fortress SoftBank and then Fortress SoftBank becomes the landlord, then maybe Fortress SoftBank works a deal with the Raiders, offers to buy them out of their contract, or it could lock them out. And now we were talking about a big powerhouse company that always keeps lawyers on retention anyways, going to court and drawing it out as long as they want to, but they will make that money back because they will start immediately constructing things that they want to do there. That takes the responsibility and legal responsibility from the city and county and places it with a private firm. So there could be a way that they could try to do that without being culpable for the damages that they would sustain in a lawsuit with the Raiders and NFL. So don't. I'm not saying that that's going to happen. I'm saying that I like to look at things that could happen when you look at legal contracts. And the legality of that could be something to look for down the road if they try to go that route.
Could it come down to potentially being how well the Raiders are supported this year at the Coliseum and how smoothly, I guess, the game day experiences go this year?
I believe so. I mean, if you go back, and I've talked about this quite frequently, any chance I got, but if you go back and look at the Houston Oilers, well, now the Tennessee Titans, they were committed to be playing in Houston for 2 years. Attendance dropped to 25,000 people per game. And Bud Adams, their owner, God rest his soul, at that time said, you know what, let's just get out of here a little bit earlier because this isn't just going to work out. So there is, you know, that possibility. And I think, too, it'd be smarter from a PR standpoint if the Raiders said, oh, yeah, we're staying here for this season, so to speak. And then, you know, because let's just say that this game week, AFC championship game, and they know going into that game that that's the last game ever at Oakland Alameda Coliseum. I find it very hard to believe the fans, whether they win or lose, are going to be very nice to the Raiders and to everybody else. So I think you'd see some things getting torn apart. So from that standpoint, I think the Raiders would be wise to not say what they're going to do until after the season. Say, okay, guess what, guys? That's our last game. We're moving a year early. This way, it kind of keeps the peace, so to speak. And it may be kind of sneaky, but it'd be for everybody's best interest.
Exactly. And I mean, you look at that stadium, it's a massive safety hazard, not just in terms of you've got your sewage issues, you've got your unprotected electrical wiring that can, if it rains, you've got electrical hazards there. But I mean, you look at just getting in and out of that stadium, it's an absolute crush when you get out of the side of the stadium and you try to get up to the BART ramp, which takes you onto the train station. Now, right there, it takes, I mean, when I go to the games there, it can take anywhere from up to an hour just to get from my seat on the same side of the stadium to the BART ramp. And it's because there's an absolute crush there. And I mean, if you've got a couple angry supporters that are like pissed off, it wouldn't take much for there to be quite a serious incident that would happen there. I know that there's a lot of safety concerns going on there from the Raiders and the NFL side.
Absolutely.
I want to interject real quick. I'm going to take a different tack on this. And after meeting Mark Davis, the first thing that he said to me, the first thing was honesty was his most important quality with his people, the people that surrounds all of this, and for himself. It just cemented my belief that everything that Mark Davis has said throughout this entire process, and I've been saying this, but this is just hammered it home. What he says is what he means. If he wants to play there until 2019, if he can absolutely do it, even though he doesn't want to pay Oakland and Alameda any more money, he will absolutely do that because he honestly believes in his heart of hearts he wants to bring a Super Bowl to Oakland and the Bay Area fans. He really, really does. And that's not a lie. It's not a con. He believes that because of all of us, he's the biggest fan of the team. There's nobody that's a better fan than him of his own team. So when he says, hey, I want to even extend out a 2019 lease agreement, he didn't just say that, not in my opinion. Now, other people will disagree with me, and that's great. You know, that's why we have shows like this, so we can have differing opinions. But I firmly believe when he looked the camera in the eye and he said that, he believed it. And he meant it. Now, things might change on the ground. Obviously, there's things that are out of people's control. But if he can help it, he'll be there until he moves into a brand new stadium in Las Vegas.
And you mentioned how Mark Davis is a man of his word. And I mean, that it's really quite a Super Bowl in Oakland would be quite the finishing off to a legacy there. And I guess if we look at the stadium in Las Vegas, How do you see that shaping in terms of the legacy for not only Mark Davis, but the Raiders as an organization?
Well, I think it justifies everything Mark Davis has done since taking over. You know, I mean, Mark Davis, catches a lot of heat for the things that, you know, his father did. You know, his father left him with a $50 million debt. His father left him with having to rebuild an organization, basically bring it up to the standards, modernize it, you know, so to speak. So for Mark Davis, this legitimizes, you know, him as an owner. And it shows that, you know, he has good people in place. There's guys that don't get enough credit. Now, everybody talks about Reggie McKenzie and what Reggie has done. Reggie's done a phenomenal job. He was trained by arguably the best draft and developed general manager in the history of the NFL in Ted Thompson. He learned salary cap in Green Bay. Reggie McKenzie does a phenomenal job, and he does it from a scouting standpoint, from dealing with the contracts and whatnot. But Mark Bedain doesn't get quite enough credit as he deserves. He's been the front man in this whole thing. He's been very heavily involved in every negotiation. Mark Bedain has been very upfront and honest with people, and to the point to where Mark isn't talking to anybody anymore publicly, because, and he really hasn't, because he's at a point where, you know, he's like, we're getting this thing done. He's been very good, and he's talked very fondly about the Oakland people and the fans that they're going to be leaving, and he doesn't want to do anything to, I don't say disrespect them, but rub even more salt on an open wound. But Mark Bedain doesn't get nearly as much credit as he deserves from the business side of things, because, you know, he's been very, when it comes to getting the business, getting the deal done and doing everything else, Mark is the point man in it, and he's done a very good job. And keep in mind, he and Mark Davis have come a long way from, they both were water boys for the Raiders when they were youth. So this is a guy that's been with the organization his whole life, and he bleeds silver and black. So I give Mark Bedain as much credit as anybody in getting this deal done.
And to further that, you know, that's why I asked that question at the relocation announcement, was because Mark talked about his father's legacy and trying to cement his father's legacy, getting something his father couldn't do. That's a Raiders Hall of Fame. That's the torch. That's a world-class facility that is a football-only facility and becoming a top five brand worldwide. That's what we're looking at here. And Vegas is the perfect opportunity to do that because of its international flavor. I mean, you can say, if you go around the world and you say Las Vegas, I mean, you can say Las Vegas in China. You can say Las Vegas in Saudi Arabia. You can say Las Vegas in Norway. Everybody knows what that is.
You can say it in Australia.
You can say it in Australia. Now, and Mark Bedain, and I was, again, when I was talking to Mark Davis and I was complimenting him on his hires, you know, remember I've talked about Christian Howard and them bringing him in as building the sponsorships from the ground up. And I said, that was a fantastic hire, Mr. Davis. And Mark pointed at Mark Bedain and said, he's my guy who hires people. He's my guy that knows all of that stuff. I let him do his work. I'm paraphrasing to a degree, so don't say, well, this is what, you know, I'm just paraphrasing. And Mark Bedain, exactly, he's the one who handles that kind of stuff. He handles the day-to-day operations of the business side of the Raiders. And Mark Davis has a vision. People don't believe that. And he has a vision. And he's told his vision to Reggie McKenzie for the football side. And he's told his vision to Mark Bedain on the business side. And he just lets him go to work. And he just sits back and he offers a suggestion here. He says, this is what I want there. And that's it. And he lets his people do work. And Mark Bedain deserves every bit of credit that Reggie McKenzie or Jack Del Rio or anybody else in this process. And I just can't reiterate it enough what Joe said. So there you go.
I think that's something that Nads and I have touched on a little bit before, and that the best, we were talking about in a football sense, but the best coaches are usually the guys that surround themselves with the best people. So they understand their limits and their limitations and what they can and can't do, and they bring in the people that know those specific areas to do those jobs for them. And that's exactly what you're talking about there, Scott. Look, guys, unfortunately, that's all the time we've got today. Thank you very much for joining us. It's been a really interesting discussion. It's been great having you on the show, and it's going to be really fascinating to see how this unfolds. Just before we wrap this up, Scott, do you just want to plug on social media where everybody can find you if they want to check you out?
Well, they can find me at @Scott_WinterNFL for Twitter. And they can find me at, well, www.lastwordonprofootball.com/author/Scott Winter. I've done other things and whatnot, but that is my main focus right now until something new comes up. There's that. Joe?
And Joe, where can the listeners find you? And don't forget to plug your hashtag Joe Knows t-shirt.
Yes, I'm glad you brought that up. You can find me, just the easiest way to find me is on Twitter at Joe Arrigo, A-R-R-I-G-O. You can find if you're interested in football and you from the college standpoint, and UNLV in particular, InsideTheRebels.com, as well as I pinned it in my Twitter profile. We have a new shirt line that we just debuted last night, the Joe Knows shirt line. It's a parody off the Bono's shirt line, Bono's slogan from the late 80s, early 90s. And we have shirts in Raiders colors, UNLV colors, and the Las Vegas Golden Knights colors, the NHL hockey team. So these are the first editions that we will have out, and we have already three more designs in the making for the new shirts. So if you guys want to get them, we have a great deal right now. Shirts are $30 each, or you can get three for $75. It saves you about $15 on that. So you get all three shirts. You could be the first people in your neck of the woods rocking these shirts and tell them Joe knows this and Joe knows that. So you guys can enjoy that. So I appreciate you letting me plug that. Thank you very much. And thank you for having me on it. It's been a blast.
And they are lit. I'm just saying. Those shirts are lit.
I'll definitely be getting one, Joe. Definitely getting your silver and black one. That's for sure. Wow, what a jam-packed episode. Thank you so much to Joe and to Scott for coming on the show today. It's really appreciated by both Duncan and I. Make sure you follow them on their social media handles, guys. Also, make sure you follow us on Twitter at @AnyGivenMONPOD and also like us on Facebook. We're on there at Any Given Monday Pod.
Guys, you can also check us out on Twitter. You can catch Nads at HB Nadolny, NADOLNY. And you can catch me at DSong, SOANG. And let's make sure you get some questions coming in for hashtag AskNads. That'll be back again in the next episode.
It definitely will be, and we're going to have an absolute jam-packed episode next week. We're going to be looking more at the draft. We're going to be previewing that a lot more in depth because the draft is only a couple of weeks around the corner. I'm really excited, Dunk.
Yeah, it's getting closer and closer. I'm very, very keen for it. So we'll be smashing out those last few position previews, and then, of course, we've got some mock drafts coming your way as well.
In the meantime, guys, keep fighting for those inches. Take care. Have a good one.
Bye. Beaver!